Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Good evening, everyone. Okay, we continue now with the study of the Samadhi Sutta. This is the discourse on right view. And this is spoken by the Venerable Sariputta. And last time I explained the section on the wholesome and the unwholesome, the kusala and the akusala, which centers around the 10 wholesome and unwholesome courses of action and the respective wholesome and unwholesome routes. And now we come to the section on nutriment, ahara. This is actually the section on what will be called the four nutriments. Okay, so after Venerable Sariputta gave that explanation, the monks expressed their appreciation, and then they asked him the question whether there is another way in which a noble disciple can be considered one of right view. That is, one who has perfect confidence in the Dhamma and has arrived at the true Dhamma, the good Dhamma. Okay, and Venerable Sariputta says that there is, because as we see, he's going to explain right view from a number of different angles. Altogether, I think there's 16 different angles from which right view can be considered in this sutta. And so here he introduces the next topic by saying, when, friends, a noble disciple understands nutriment, the origin of nutriment, the cessation of nutriment, and the way leading to the cessation of nutriment, in that way he is one of right view, and so on, who has arrived at this true Dhamma. Okay, this part, if you remember the terms that I introduced last week, this is what we call in Pali, Uddesa, which means the short or condensed presentation, the introductory paragraph that opens up the topic. And now we come to what is called the Niddesa. That means the elaborate, or the elaboration, the more detailed presentation. And usually the more detailed presentation unfolds by taking each of the terms in the Uddesa, in the short presentation, and then asking, what is the meaning of that term? Or how are we to understand that term? And so Sariputta is going to approach that topic by asking, what is nutriment? What is the origin of nutriment? What is the cessation of nutriment? And what is the way leading to the cessation of nutriment? But before I go into the explanation of the Niddesa, the elaborate treatment, I just want to briefly take a look at the very structure of the Udesa, because this is quite important in itself. We have here the understanding of nutriment, right? The understanding of its origin, the understanding of its cessation, an understanding of the way to its cessation. Does this look familiar? What does it resemble? Exactly the same pattern as the Four Noble Truths. So we see that what is taking place is that Venerable Sariputta is taking the pattern of the Four Noble Truths and applying that pattern to different phenomena. And if you remember two classes back when I spoke about how Venerable Sariputta first met the Buddha's teaching, I gave the story about his encounter with the Arahant Astaji. And Sariputta first awakened to the Dhamma when Astaji spoke to him this verse, this four-line verse, whatever phenomena there are that originate from a cause, the Tathagata, that's the Buddha, has explained the cause. And also that which is their cessation, that is the teaching of the great ascetic, the great monk. Okay, so Sariputta's first awakening took place through this verse that speaks about different phenomena that arise from a cause. That speaks about the Buddha explaining the cause, explaining the cessation. The verse doesn't mention the path to cessation, but that is implied. And so we could say that that basic pattern, I call it the Four Truths pattern, sort of impressed itself on Venerable Sariputta's mind from the start. And so we could see that this pattern has become very fundamental to his way of thinking, and now he uses this pattern as a way to approach any phenomena taken up for examination. And so now we take this in the case of nutriment. And this is a topic which is so often overlooked, the importance of this topic. And yet we have to say that it's to the credit of the genius of the Buddha that he took the simple fact of nutriment, of eating in its different dimensions, and put a spotlight on it which highlights its deep significance. In fact, there's one statement that comes in various places in the canon which says that if one deeply reflects and contemplates on one fact, it is enough to lead to complete disenchantment, to dispassion, to enlightenment, to nibbana. And what is that one fact, that one truth? Sabbe sata ahara titika, which means that all living beings are supported by food, by nutriment. And if we consider this from the simplest forms of life, the most basic bacteria, microbes, what they do is to combine certain molecules in order to form simple sugars, which provide them with energy, by combining these sugars, they form proteins, and that enables them to live. That is already the process of nutrition. And then, based upon those simplest forms of life, more complex forms of life evolve. And how do they evolve? By eating the simpler forms of life. And then, based on those more complex forms of life, still more complex forms of life evolve. And how do they survive? By eating those more complex forms of life that feed on the simpler forms of life. And so it goes on from one level to another level to another level to another level till we have the most complex forms of life, us, eating upon everything else. But we shouldn't think that we get away without being eaten, since all the time what is going on within our own bodies is a constant process of nutrition. Our own bodies are the homes for thousands and maybe millions of species of bacteria that we don't see, don't know about. And what are those bacteria doing? They're feeding on us. And then, often when we get ill, what does that illness mean? It means that those bacteria or viruses or whatever that are feeding on us, or that usually means that some new form of life has come and lodged itself in our body and is feeding on us, and our body is not equipped to deal with them. We haven't yet built up sufficient, the right kind of antibodies for tackling them. We say that we're sick, but what is illness? But most often, it means that the body is being devoured by some strange form of life that it's not able to counteract yet. And then what happens when this body dies? If it doesn't quickly get cremated, or even if it does get cremated, but especially if it doesn't get quickly cremated, if it gets buried, then that body goes right down to the bottom of the food chain again and starts supporting the growth, the development of those simple forms of life, start having a feast on it. Not only the simplest bacteria, but then many types of worms and insects will start eating the body. And in the animal kingdom, which seems to be, maybe when we look at it in pictures, such romantically charming, peaceful, we think the nature lovers think, if we could only return to nature, everything would be so peaceful, charming. We would all be living in harmony and in peace. But what is going on in nature? It's really a constant battle and struggle for survival. And what are they struggling for? Not space to put up buildings. Not for national territory. Not for property rights, copyrights. They're struggling, fighting with each other to see who is going to turn who else's bodies into food. So certain animals feed very peacefully, very gently. They feed on plant lives, plant forms, but then to disturb this peaceful and quite romantic scene, certain wolves are dwelling on right outside the borders of the picture, waiting to pounce on those peaceful sheep, peaceful cattle, and catch them and take them home for their young to devour and to eat, and to eat themselves. And even within the animal kingdom, many animals eat their own young. And within the insect realm also, it's a constant battle for survival. What is that battle for survival? But it's, again, it's the battle to see which species succeeds in devouring members of the other species. And if we go out into deep forest, deep jungle, and we feel afraid, what are we afraid of? It's not that wild animals are going to attack us just for the sport of it, just for the fun of it, but they see us as food. We don't think of ourselves as food. We think, I have my projects, I have my family, I have my friends, and I have to get back. I have appointments next week, and I have dates on such and such a day, and I have to make telephone calls, and I have to meet this person. But if that wolf is coming, that lion or tiger is coming, he doesn't care what appointments you have. He doesn't care. You bring him, you flash your business card, president of this company, CEO of this corporation. He doesn't care. He'll just take that business card, tear it up, and say, come along with me. We've got a delicious supper tonight. And even if one is not going through these deep jungles and dangerous forests, but just taking a little stroll out, even on the walkways here, sometimes there are these annoying flies coming that we swat away. We have to swat them away, swish them away. They're not landing on us just because they want to annoy us, just to make trouble for us, disturb our walking meditation. They're landing on us because they're hungry. So they know a good meal when they see one. And then when human beings don't get enough to eat, then there takes place hunger, severe hunger, malnutrition. And when that malnutrition, hunger become extremely severe, then it turns into famine. And these are conditions that oppress such large numbers of people in the world even today. Hundreds of thousands of people in Asia and Africa aren't able to obtain, even in this country, to obtain adequately nutritious food. And then hundreds and thousands of people are not able to obtain any food at all, just the barest amount of food, just to sustain them at the bare survival level. And sometimes even that amount drops away And then there takes place starvation and death from starvation. Human beings, animals. And so we could see that this, beneath this fact of eating, one goes to restaurants. Ah, let's go out. French restaurant, Italian restaurant. Ah, here's a nice South Indian restaurant. Or have you ever tried Thai food before? Oh, no, I've never tried it. Oh, it's so delicious. And so we think it's something for to delight the palate. But underneath this enjoyment and delight, there's this, we call it the concealed noble truth of dukkha, the truth of suffering. And it took the Buddha, who came from a well-established family, which was royal family, not lacking for food, to discover the deep suffering involved in the process of nutrition, and to see how the process of nutrition occurs not merely at the material level, but how it permeates different dimensions of life, and in fact how the very process of existence is nothing but a process of nutrition occurring in different modes at different levels. Okay, so coming back to our text, the Venerable Sariputta says, he raises first the question, what is nutriment? And the word here, ahara, no, in normal discourse in Pali, or I guess Sanskrit too, it means food. But here he says, and he's really repeating words of the Buddha, he says there are four kinds of nutriment for the maintenance of beings that already have come to be and for the support of those seeking a new existence. Here there are two expressions used, that these four kinds of nutriment are for maintaining or for supporting, for the continuation of beings that have already come into existence. That is, once a being has come into existence, then it needs food or nutriment to sustain it in existence. But the text also says that these four kinds of nutriment are the support or the help, the assistance for those. Here, I don't agree anymore with this seeking a new existence. I would take the word to be for those about to come into a new existence. It's a fine point in Pali scholarship, but I agree with an explanation given by K.R. Norman, the Pali scholar, that the sambhavesinang is what is called a future active participle, which means something that's about to take place. Okay, and what are these? So these are beings who are about to come into existence, who are, let's say, coming into existence, who are seeking, well, here I'm using the word seeking, but who are not yet established in a new existence, but are moving in this state towards a new existence, having passed out of their old state of existence, and now moving towards a new state of existence, these four nutriments support them, even in that condition. And what are these four nutriments? They are what's called kabalikaro aharo. This is what it's translated here, physical food as nutriment. This is what we ordinarily call food, material food, which might be gross or it might be subtle. For it's said that for even amongst human beings, we have sometimes gross material food that would be like solid food that we eat, and subtle food would might be something like maybe a drink like this, or something like honey water. That would be subtle, relatively subtle. But then one could compare the food of beings in one realm of existence with the food of beings in another realm of existence. So the food of human beings would be gross, and the food of the devas would be subtle. But it's all grouped together as material food or physical food. It's all something eaten. The second is called contact. I'll come to this in a moment. The third is mental volition. And the fourth is consciousness. Okay, what is the common characteristic of these four factors that makes them all called nutriment? What do they all have in common that entitles them to this label, designation, nutriment? I don't think physical food is included. I actually raised the question rhetorically. I'm going to answer it. I give the answer based on the commentarial explanation. What the commentary says is they are special conditions for the continuity of life. And so the material food is a special condition that supports this physical body. Without physical food, the body cannot survive. Contact is the special support for feeling. Volition is a special support for consciousness. And consciousness, in turn, is a special support for name and form. Now I'll explain this a little more elaborately. Okay, we know that material food is a special support for this physical body, for physical life. And as soon as we take material food, even as soon as we put it in the mouth, already that food starts to produce different it starts to contribute through, we could say, through a process of osmosis. It starts to seep through the cellular membranes. It starts to nourish the cells. It starts to promote the growth of the cells, perhaps to stimulate subdivision amongst the cells. Then when the food gets swallowed and goes down into the stomach, then it gets broken down by the digestive juices into its nutrients, into its constituents. The nutrients are extracted and used for the, in different ways, for the, through the process of metabolism. They're used for the replenishment of the physical body, again, to build up more proteins, to the vitamins are taken out, to again, to nourish the cells in different ways. The sugars are taken out to give energy. Starches are broken down to produce sugars for energy. If we have any nutritional specialists, they could give more detailed explanations. Okay, then contact is another type of food. Contact means can anybody give me a brief definition of contact? You have the three terms?
Yes, meeting.
Exactly. It's the coming together of sense faculty. Let's say it's the coming together of consciousness with object through sense faculty. And contact is of three kinds. Anybody know the three kinds of contact? It's close. It's close enough. It's contact to be experienced as pleasant, contact to be experienced as painful. Contact to be experienced as neutral, as neither painful nor pleasant. So the contact, we can say, is already differentiated according to the type of feeling it tends to generate. And so each of these types of contact will produce, will give rise to the corresponding type of feeling. A contact that is to be experienced as pleasant, as soon as it is sort of processed by the faculty of cognition, will give rise to a pleasant feeling. A contact that is to be experienced as painful, as soon as it's processed, will give rise to a painful feeling. And a contact that is to be processed as neither painful nor pleasant, a contact that is to be experienced as neither painful nor pleasant, as soon as it's processed, will give rise to a neutral feeling, a feeling that's neither painful nor pleasant. Afterwards, one can change one's response to that contact so that if the initial contact is one to be experienced as painful, say, one could alter one's mind so that one will experience it with equanimity as neutral. But in the first instance, each contact will give rise to the type of feeling that corresponds to its own nature. Okay, then we have mental volition. This is the third type of nutriment. Okay, it says that mano sanchetana, mental volition is nutriment, nourishes the three, the three realms of existence. How does it do so? Okay, mental volition is karma. Remember the Buddha's famous statement, I think I quoted it last week, Chetanaham Bhikkhave Kammang Vadami. It is volition that I call karma. So this mental volition is karma. Wholesome karma, unwholesome karma, different types of karma. But here, from this angle, one distinguishes karma by way of the different states of existence to which it can lead by way of the process of rebirth. So these volitions are occurring within our minds all the time. And we don't know that these volitions are actually functioning in subtle ways as nutriment. At one level, each volition is nourishing everything else that's occurring along with it. So the volition is nourishing our state of consciousness right in the present. So, for example, if I form a volition, intention to run 100 times in a circle around this building, okay, it's that volition is nourishing the consciousness that is being aware of the act of running around the building. That volition is nourishing the physical processes by which I manipulate this body so that I run around the building. So that is, volition is nourishing many, many things that are occurring right in the present by serving as a strong condition for those events. But this volition also builds up karma with the potential to ripen in some future state of existence. Not that running around the building is going to take on that role, but different ethically significant actions. So that unwholesome karma will nourish sense-fear existence in the miserable realms, whereas good, virtuous, wholesome sense-fear karma will nourish new existence in a happy realm in the sense-fear. a happy realm, a good state in the human realm, or rebirth into one of the deva realms. If one gains the jhanas and masters the jhana, that will nourish rebirth in one of the divine realms, the Brahma realms. If one gains the formless attainments, the arupa samapattis, that will become that volition, that force of the will, that kama, that will nourish rebirth in the form, one of the formless realms. So this volition is a force that arises along with consciousness, and then it directs the consciousness towards one or another of these realms of renewed existence. And so we can say that mental volition nourishes existence throughout this entire samsara, with all of its many different realms and planes of being. So every type of existence, from the little insects, the big animals, human beings, deities that we can't see, all of them come into being because their previous actions have nourished their rebirth consciousness and have brought that consciousness into existence in a particular realm of existence. Okay, now what happens at the moment of rebirth is that consciousness arises. We can say that vijnana, consciousness, is the channel, it's the main factor for the rebirth process. Okay, and how is consciousness a nutriment? Okay, already at the very moment of rebirth, what happens is that consciousness becomes established. We could say it gets a footing in a new existence. If it's going to be a human rebirth, the consciousness, speaking metaphorically, descends into the mother's womb. And at the very moment that consciousness springs up in the new existence, it brings along with it, or it generates along with it, body, that's rupa, and the other mental components, that those are called nama. Together it's called nama rupa, name and form. It's not that consciousness causes the form, the body, the physical component to come into being. If it's a human rebirth, then the woman contributes the ovum, the egg that's fertilized by the sperm. But in order for that fertilized egg to turn into the physical body of a living being, there has to take place not only fertilization, but there has to be consciousness of a being that has passed away, has to connect to that fertilized ovum. And it's only when consciousness connects that a new life begins. And so we could say that consciousness is what turns that fertilized ovum, the fertilized egg, into the body, even a one-celled body of a new being. And once that connection takes place, then the other factors, the other mental factors of nama, what are those other mental factors? Feeling, perception, volition. Feeling, perception, volition. A few others I mentioned, contact, even attention. All of those, in some degree, even very simple, very primitive degree, are present at the very moment of conception. And they all arise because consciousness is what connects and keeps flowing the process of life. So one can say that it is consciousness that is nourishing the renewal of the life process. Then, throughout the entire course of a life, consciousness is continually nourishing body and mind, the body and mental components. So it's not only eating that nourishes consciousness, but consciousness nourishes this body. For example, if I'm feeling very weak, but I make strong determination with willpower, then I can sometimes undertake very strenuous activities. That shows that it's consciousness nourishing these activities. The consciousness is affecting the body. Any questions at this point?
Yes, Padre. I guess what would overcome this constant process of eating cycle would be maybe a moral causation that would be able to put a break in it at a certain point and let
Yeah, but now your question is jumping to later parts of this. Just anything on the four nutriments that has to be cleared up. Not, of course, we still have three truths connected with the nutriments to go.
The example that you have just given seems to me more
Yeah, while I was speaking it, I thought of that too. So, yeah, it's more volition. But volition, consciousness, they're interconnected. To hold the life and what? So consciousness holds this life, keeps it going.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, in that sense. Yeah. Only if it's directly relevant. Okay.
Did you say that the consciousness at the moment of conception enters into the fertilizer. But I recall one sutta where Buddha says, come to realize that this is a body sustained by gruel or porridge, the consciousness bound up with the body.
Yeah.
And I recall another sutta where a monk took the view that consciousness is sustained after death, and the Buddha criticized him severely.
Okay, I'll just deal with that very, very briefly here. What the view that monk held was the view that it is the same consciousness that goes on, identifying that consciousness as a kind of self-identical entity, like an Atman, like a soul, that remains the same and that goes on without changing, without being subject to conditions. But here, consciousness is something that's always changing, always depending upon conditions changing, but it is the stream of consciousness, the process of consciousness, that continues. I think I should continue. I want to finish this section. Okay, so now we come to the... So these are the four nutriments of life. Then we come to the proposition, with the arising of craving, there is the arising of nutriment. And with the cessation of craving, there is the cessation of nutriment. Okay, so... The first statement pinpoints craving as the cause for the arising of nutriment. Okay, this is interesting to reflect on this, because sometimes it seems that nutriment exists first, like one doesn't have any say in a matter, one gets born, food is there. And then craving arises based on food. But according to the Buddha's teaching, it's actually our craving which brings us into this existence. And then once we become established in a new existence, then craving will arise based on any form of nutriment that it can settle upon. And so whatever gives pleasure or satisfaction to craving, that will become a type of nutriment to sustain that craving. So craving is described as that which delights here and there. It goes on delighting here and there. Okay, so taking this at a more microscopic level. Okay, at the very moment of conception, the very moment of rebirth, that moment consciousness settles upon a fertilized ovum. At that moment, already at that moment, the process of nutrition begins. Because there is, in that one-celled egg, there is some nutritive essence which has to be metabolized. It begins to be metabolized. And then the process of ingestion, the cell starts taking in food from its environment, metabolizing that food, transforming it, starts going on. And there is some consciousness of that. The consciousness holding on to the new existence, clinging to that new existence, propelling the process forward into the new existence. At that very moment of conception, already there is contact, volition, and consciousness. And then as the process of embryonic development takes place, again, there is continual new contacts. Those contacts give rise to feeling. That feeling will become the basis for craving. There will be in that little infant or the fetus or embryo, there will be volition, the volition to go on, continuing to exist. There will be consciousness. And then all of these will arise associated with craving, and they will serve as, we could say, as nutriment for craving. So then, with the cessation of craving, there is the cessation of nutriment. It doesn't mean that when craving is completely ended, that one doesn't have to eat anymore, that one stops feeling willing or being conscious. But what I would say is that these four types of ordinary nutrition occur in a completely different way. Like an ordinary person in eating, there is the craving for taste, for enjoyment. But when craving is ended, then there's no more craving or concern with taste, with flavor. But food is consumed just for the purpose of supporting and maintaining life. The process of experience will go on, so there will be feeling, volition, consciousness, but no craving for the enjoyment or delight through this process of experience. In that way, you could say, as David was pointing, this is what breaks the cycle of nutriment, the process of continuous nutriment. And then the way leading to the cessation of nutriment is just the Noble Eightfold Path from right view to right concentration. Okay, so then at this point, Venerable Sariputta has finished the elaboration of the basic terms of this section. Then he brings in this concluding passage. When a noble disciple has thus understood nutriment, the origin of nutriment, the cessation of nutriment, and the way leading to the cessation of nutriment, he entirely abandons the underlying tendency to greed. This would be sensual greed or sensual greed. Actually, that should be lust. It should be sensual lust. He abolishes the underlying tendency to aversion. This much shows the attainment of the stage of non-returner. Then he extirpates the underlying tendency to the view and conceit, I am. And by abandoning ignorance and arousing true knowledge, he here and now makes an end of suffering. That much shows the attainment of arahantship. And then, in this way too, a noble disciple is one of right view, whose view is straight, who has perfect or unshakable confidence in the Dhamma and has arrived at this true Dhamma. Okay, this will take care of the basic presentation. Now, if there's any questions, we could just feel welcome to us. Okay, Suki, now you can ask.
About the mental pollution, the ahara here is for the maintenance of being already has come to be.
Yeah.
So it is after after the consciousness in this life.
Yeah.
Not before the consciousness. So it seems to me that is more of like not really a karma kind of a, not sankara kind of a solution. Rather, it's the basis of a thinking which will bring in more and more potential kind of thing. This is somehow that one a little closer than sankara.
I'm not sure I understand your question. Is it the point that from that statement that these four kinds of nutriments are for the maintenance of things that have already come to be, that this means that the nutriments are not acting from one life across to the next life?
I thought these four nutriments is talking about what's happening in this present life for the maintenance and
I think one has to understand it in both senses. I would say the four kinds of nutriments are for the maintenance of beings that have already come to be. In that sense, we would say the four types of nutriment are functioning for beings that have come into existence already in this life. And so manosanchetana, volition, is functioning as a nutriment for us throughout this life. And that volition is nourishing all other aspects of our being right here and now. Like, okay, when I have the volition to speak, then that volition is nourishing the movements of my body, the movements of my mouth, movements of the vocal cords. The volition is nourishing the thought process so that words will form in my mind that come out through my speech. Somebody who is, say, in a dangerous situation has the volition to survive. So that will, volition to survive, will nourish his intense effort to survive, to escape from danger. Okay, so that is the way the volition is nourishing many aspects of the life right here and now. And then that volition also serves as a nutriment for, you say, the being who is about to come to be, or the being seeking a new existence, in that we say that the volition of a previous life, of the previous life, is going to nourish the coming into existence of a being in the new life. That's the karmic process of bringing a new being into existence.
So we've been going the other way. Is there a way we can understand the first two types of nutrients, food and contact, in terms of the support of those about to come to new existence?
Is there a way to understand how the first two types of nutriment will support beings who are about to come to be? Well, I can think of it very simply that when a mother is giving, what's the word that's used? When the embryo is taking shape in a mother's womb, and about to come to be, then just the very physical process will bring about the upsurge of milk into the mother's breast, that she'll have milk to feed the newborn baby. I'm trying to think of an example of how contact will be a condition for a being about to come to be. I would have to use my... I would have to think about it. Ken?
The statement with the position of craving, there is the position of nutrients.
Yeah.
For arahants, they don't have any craving.
Yeah.
They get hungry, they need to eat.
Yeah.
So in this case, this nutriment is not a regular food.
Yeah. Okay, this is a good point. Okay, the arahant has eliminated craving, and yet the arahant still gets hungry, still eats food. And that food still serves as nutrition, as nutriment for the arahant. But the act of eating will no longer be attended by any type of craving. And so the act of eating will no longer... It has a very different character from the act of eating from a person who's not an arahant. It's just the process of hunger, the process of eating to satisfy that hunger goes on as a purely physical process, a completely natural process. But there's no longer any kind of craving for delight and taste, no urge to go on eating to enjoy oneself, but it's just eating to sustain life, to support life. Also, he experiences feelings through contact. He'll have volition, though that volition no longer creates karma. And, of course, he has consciousness.
Does one call the Avanta, does one call the four divine abodes, metta, karma, does one call that spiritual food?
One could say that they're spiritual food. They're still a form of ahara, or the volition connected with them would still be a type of ahara. And if it's not connected with wisdom, then it will bring new existence in planes corresponding to those four abodes. That is, if one achieves the jhanas through those four abodes. Any further questions?
The third and the fourth nutriment both contribute to the arising of our next life. And what's the difference between these two nutriments?
Okay, the volit. Manosanchetana is the volition. That is the karma that brings the... That is the karma that directs consciousness from one life to the next life. Okay, the consciousness as a nutriment is present throughout the life, but it's in any given life, it first arises at the very moment of conception. And so at that moment of conception, the consciousness will bring into being nama rupa, the physical body, even as a one-celled fertilized egg, and it will bring along the other mental components, what are called nama. And so the first moment of consciousness in the new life, that is the first occurrence of the nutriment of consciousness. And then throughout the course of life, consciousness is always functioning as a nutriment, in that it is always nourishing. In some way, it's nourishing the bodily process, because the consciousness acts on the body. And consciousness is always nourishing the other mental components, feeling, perception, volition, because they depend on consciousness. Any further questions? Okay, then we will close for the evening, and we will give some nutriment, of meritorious nutriment, to the devas, the Buddhas, the Nagas, the dragon spirits, and to all beings, wishing them to rejoice in the merits, to protect the Buddha's sasana, to protect the world, to protect ourselves and others. Akasata Chabumata Deva Naga Mahitika Punyantang Anumotitva Chirang Rakantu Sasanam. Akasata Chabumata Deva Naga Mahitika Panyantang Anumoditva Chirang Rakantu Desanam. Akasata Chabumata Deva Naga Mahitika Panyantang Anumoditva Chirang Rakantu Mangparang. Etavata ca amhehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. Etavata ca amhehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya. Etavata ca ammehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe sata anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya.